Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Monday. It's the 13th of December. I can't believe it. Christmas is around the corner. It's going to be with us very soon. And then there's New Year. Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, we've got some fantastic guests lined up for today. We're going to begin with none other than John Bailey. He's the publisher and the editor of the White Plains Citizenet Reporter. And he'll be on from 10 to 10:30. And then we're going to speak to Michael Edelman, the national and political analyst and pundit. And he'll be on with us at 10:30. And then I'll see if I can catch up with some other items with you from 11 to 12 noon. So let me go back to the studio screen. And, well, John is not on yet, so we'll have to put him on hold, assuming he comes on, and we'll move on to some other news that you might find interesting. Where is it here? Yeah, this I found really very exciting because I didn't realize there were two things that interested me. One is that this took place in Eilat in the southern tip of Israel, and the name of Hanaz Sandhu of India was crowned the 70th Miss Universe on Sunday, topping a field of some 80 contestants in a pageant that was touched by politics and pandemic. So the previously reigning Miss Universe is Andrea Meza of Mexico. She crowned her successor, a Bollywood actress, in the Israeli Red Sea resort town of Eilat. And the pageant was held in the middle of the night, wrapping up at 5 in the morning local time, that's 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to accommodate the primetime schedule in the United States. Sandusha said she was feeling, quote, overwhelmed because it's been 21 years since India got Miss Universe crown and it's happening right now. That really is very exciting. So the pageant included traditional displays of national costumes, swimwear, and a series of interview questions to test contestants' public speaking skills. The top 10 showed off intricately bedazzled full-length gowns in either gold, silver, or bronze. The Philippines' Beatrice Luigi Gomez wore an asymmetrical cut dress with one sleeve, highlighting a new tattoo she said, quote, celebrates her womanhood, end quote. But the contest also drew some attention in recent weeks for other reasons. The grassroots Palestinian-led boycott had urged contestants to skip the event to protest Israel's treatment of Palestinians. And in the end, only Malaysia, a predominantly Muslim country with close ties to the Palestinians, did not send a representative, citing the global COVID-19 situation. The South African government, which also strongly supports the Palestinian cause, withdrew support for the country's representative over her participation. So that's the story that went on there. So let me move on, get back to the studio screen. Bear with me a moment. Maybe John's there. Oh, yeah, he is. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning from White Plains, New York, USA.
Good morning, John. Well, it's good of you to call. I wanted to ask you about a couple of things that are happening. Probably the most exciting is the French American School of New York. They've exited the, their interest all of a sudden. And what is the curious case of the missing contract in the nighttime that refers to FASNY?
Well, the first time we heard that the FASNY had sold the property was on the very day that was the deadline for the parties of the suits, of the suit, to notify the Court of Appeals in Brooklyn, the appellate court in Brooklyn, that there were some conflicts and there were any reasons why the suit shouldn't proceed ahead or what dates they were available for the appellate court to hear the argument. The very day and it came out via a press release to the media.
Mm-hmm.
Which would think they might have sent it to the court. Yes, that's basically, that's contempt of court.
I think so. That was the question in my mind. Is that a legal form of conduct, or did the court get an official notice?
Well, the court said basically beginning in September that they are thinking of scheduling an argument sometime in the fall. Let us know dates when you are available or not available. They sent that to both sets of attorneys, and they're supposed to tell the court what dates they're available. And the two sides discussed dates, but at no time was there any indication they were selling the property. To anybody's knowledge, it's been rumored for some time, but rumors are not actually telling the appellate court, look, we're in serious negotiations. You know, that's all they had to say.
Right. So does the court have any recourse with this sort of conduct? Is that acceptable?
Well, at this time,
so wealthy,
we do not know. They could. They could fine the parties. I think the maximum penalty is $10,000, according to the FASNY, according to the Getney Association attorney. So, at any rate, when this press release came out, small change indeed. Now, what happened was that the attorney for Getney Association, Dan Seidel, said, wait a minute, where's the contract? It's not on file, and it was not filed as of record at the county court, the Westchester County Court. Now, this is no small change. It is a $16.5 million purchase of the property by the Farrell Building Company out in and $16.5 million. I think you might want to prioritize what you file. And the court, not the court, but the county clerk's office, when contacted, said they could not find any record of the deed. So this sent Mr. Seidel in a real quandary, because he felt that because they had sold the property, that his portion of the legal appeal that the Getney Association made was now moot, because the environmental issue, which he prepared the brief on, the environmental issue being that the city of White Plains did not conduct a thorough environmental review of the final approved site plan. Okay, the property is sold, a whole new environmental plan and site plan will be developed. So therefore, the present one is moot. So he feels he shouldn't argue it, because it's a moot, a waste of the court's time. But he had no evidence that it had actually been sold. So eventually he persuaded the city of White Plains to confirm it. That it was sold.
And did they?
And it had closed. It had closed and it had sold. Now, we don't know when the close was, but he got a copy of the contract. Seen the contract.
Does White Plains act that way? If they know the property was sold, shouldn't the Getney Association have received some sort of notice? Isn't that normal?
Well, I'm sure that the city knew that it was closed, but they were told it was closed, and they told Mr. Seidel that it was closed, and they eventually sent him and then the Farrell company sent him the contract.
The Farrell company sent him the contract
because he contacted
them. I know, but
them.
the Farrell company didn't send him the notice when it was already concluded. I don't understand. It just doesn't seem like a normal form of conduct. It's very disrespectful.
The question is,
do you know? I don't know. That's why I'm asking the question. Do you know what the intent was to play that sort of con game? Because it doesn't seem
I have no idea of the motives for putting out a press release to the media before
Neither
anybody knew that it was sold.
Yeah, because I've never heard that.
Or before,
basically,
let me rephrase that, before anybody felt like telling people it was sold. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, I've never heard that sort of conduct because I didn't think that that was a standard format. Usually the lawyers would be engaged in understanding what's what, and that would be enough, notice.
That we have sorted through the legal weeds growing in this field for 11 years, I would like to point out that on Friday, Mr. Seidel applied to withdraw as plaintiff appellate in this case, which essentially takes him out of it, and the issue is moot. And on Thursday evening, the Getney Association voted unanimously also to withdraw their environmental challenge, which they had filed with Mr. Seidel. So that, theoretically, has been put to bed. There is a question whether they will proceed with the other issue, which is the deed that goes with the property, whether that still holds sway over the property going forward. And there is talk that that will not be contested either.
Do you know who the new developer is and what their intention is, or we don't know that? It's too soon even to tell.
The new developer.
But they certainly invested it for a reason.
Yeah, the new developer is Farrell Building Company, located in Bridgehampton, New York. He is a developer of high-end luxury homes in the Hamptons, in New York State, and in Florida. He built, they're worth about $2, $3, $4, $5 million. Those are the kinds of homes he builds. And this is, and luxurious housing is what he is planning for the old Ridgeway Country Club. And that has yet to be devised. And
proceeds. The question becomes, is this the sort of thing that the Getney Association, do you know if in advance that they have, they would be interested in that sort of development, or
well, their position has always been, their position has always been that it should be developed as zone, which is R1-30, which means a lot of 30,000 feet. Only one house per lot.
So how many lots do we have there? Do we know?
The guess is about 40 homes.
Well, that's a big project.
Yes, it is a big project.
We also don't know how big the houses are. We don't know how large each individual home will be, but if it's luxury, it's probably not going to be a small little, tiny house. So it's going to be grand.
Yes, but it would dramatically rise the home values of the homes in the surrounding the golf course, which was always their issue, that putting a school there would decrease property values and deprive the city of taxes.
So now if they build luxury homes that won't, they would actually embellish property prices around the area? Seems like it would.
That is the guess. It seems like it would.
It's not even a guess. It's logical that it would do that, because all the property around it would also rise in value because of the proximity. Well, it is what it is. We'll find out soon enough. So how long do you think the process will take? Or maybe the Farrell company is ready to go. It shouldn't be that difficult.
Well,
I'm sure they've got plans like this on the books for years.
Yeah. Well, when I looked at the contract, I noted that several agreements were dated back to, you know, several situations in the contract were agreed to back on July the 30th, which means they've been negotiating this for 5 months, what, something like that, 4 months? So there was no reason to waste the appellate court's time.
Well, that's what I find offensive. I think that the appellate court could be able to sue the Soros people because they didn't respond as they should. And these people don't, you know, they have things to do. You know, these are the judges. They preside
they
over the court.
They are overloaded with backed up appeals.
Yeah, so if you don't tell anybody that you're not going to show up, then you're wasting the court's time. If I were the court, I would sue them for it, and it wouldn't
well,
be cheap
either. Well, they can sanction them, but not for much money. But
be
that as it
they
may,
they don't care about being sanctioned.
Yes.
They don't care about it because evidently they did it. You know, I find it an unbelievable goal, but I guess that's a Soros operation, whatever it is.
Well, the Soros is no longer connected with the board. In fact, they've changed the whole board there.
Oh,
mainly as a result of this ongoing thing that has drained the resources of the school, and while their enrollment has been declining, and so this is a valuable lesson. You can fight City Hall, you can fight developers, but you have to have patience, you have to have deep pockets, or somebody who cares enough about an issue to do your legal work pro bono and do it expertly, which was what Mr. Seidel and Claudia Jaffe, the attorney who handled the document, the ongoing covenant issue, did.
Mm-hmm.
And they are to be saluted because they cared enough. Imagine that. A lawyer cares passionately about justice, truth, and the American way, both of them. Right?
Hate to
imagine
tell you,
that.
There are a lot of lawyers like that. You know, people just admonish them, but there's no reason for it. There's some really phenomenal lawyers. Anyway, I want to ask you about the second thing. Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York State, she lowered the boom on New York State spreaders and raised the bar to mask up indoors in businesses of all kinds. And starting today, staff members will be fined $1,000 for each violation.
You know?
Right, each violation. So, and COVID has surged 43% in the last week. Now, what's happening with this whole yin-yang bullshit that goes on with the government and private rights? Do we have to do all of this or not? Because I think we should all be vaccinated. And I hear that in the UK, in the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said he warned on Sunday that Britain faced a tidal wave of infections from the Omicron coronavirus. Nobody knows how powerful that is. Remember we used to say if you get vaccinated or if you get over COVID, everything would be fine. But that turned out to be false because some people got long-haul COVID and they're suffering 3 months or 4 months after they got over the COVID originally. So what are we going to do? Are we going to change the attitude? Is this going to be able to stay by law to be fined $1,000 for each violation?
Well,
or
how are you going to enforce that? How are you going to enforce that? You have to take them all.
If you're not
court.
Inoculated, I would be able to enforce it. I don't know why everybody would have a problem with it.
Well,
but, I don't get it.
They have to. They have to fine. They can fine them, but I don't know if that fine has to be a public court or. They have to be subpoenaed. I think they have to decide how that's going to be done. And she also ruled that the health departments are the ones that are going to enforce compliance by visiting various businesses or I don't know how they plan to do that. They don't have the personnel.
I'm sure they'll be able to find personnel. There are a lot of people without a job. So,
yeah. Well,
if they want a job, then they'll do it.
I'm just saying the details of the logistics, okay, of how the health department is going to force this new mandate, which just needs to be ironed out and organized. Now, what has happened is New York City is... Go ahead.
The thing that's frightening about the new Omicron is it's extremely transmissible. It doubles every 2 to 3 days in Britain, which means it'll double 2 to 3 days, every 2 to 3 days in the United States, in New York State as well. And everyone is expecting a tidal wave of the Omicron coming. Are we ready, do you think? I personally don't think we're ready.
No, but I mean the spread in Westchester County, where we live, has gone up dramatically in 2 weeks. It went up 79% through December 6th. It was up 870.
Yeah, but we don't know if it's from the Omicron. We don't know if it's from the Omicron because they don't tell us the truth.
Precisely my point. They have to break this down. They have to break this down and figure out what the Omicron.
Personally, I don't trust the county executive Latimer to tell us what we need to know, and that's the thing that actually creates more people not getting inoculated because they don't understand how it could impact them. And many people believe that even if they get over getting the virus, and they get healthy after whatever time it takes for them to get healthy, they don't realize they could get COVID, and it could come back. Not for everybody.
Yes, it could come back. And they could get reinfected, and many are compromised. Maya Gay, the columnist in the New York Times, has been suffering from it because she got COVID, and she is still suffering from it. And that is one main person that I know of, and people do get the recurring conditions. So, I mean, you don't want to get it. But, I mean, my personal feeling is Westchester is now infecting at an awful rate. We had 3 straight days of over 400 new infections on December 8th, 9th, and 10th. We don't have the figures from Saturday, and we don't have the figures from Sunday yet. But I think that what happened was that Governor Hochul was so shocked that the 497 on Thursday, which was when she then issued the new order on masking Friday, that that's why there was a delay in the figures, but it has gone on December the 10th. We had 459 for 6 days from the 5th through the 10th. We had 2,438 new infections. That's a rate of 3.8% positive. Pushing up on 4%, which is not good. It's not good. It's terrible. That's all.
Does anyone have a plan on how to try to get people to come forward and become inoculated, or are we just fighting or beating a dead horse because there are people who don't want to get inoculated? I don't fully understand or comprehend their rationale. one thing is interesting.
We could pay them.
Let's not go there and waste time because we've only got 5 minutes left.
Sure.
The bottom line is that at the end of the day, if you get the inoculation, then you're protected from getting the COVID. If you don't get inoculated, and this is what people don't understand, then you're not protected at all. Does that mean that you'll get infected? No, it doesn't guarantee that you'll get infected.
But you have to protect yourself.
Exactly. So most people don't seem to put those two things together. If you get the inoculation, you're protected. If you don't get the inoculation, you don't get protected. So which is the better way to go? It doesn't make sense. And people are not dying. This is the thing that people don't want to understand. People do not die getting inoculated. Was there ever one report in the nation that anyone died getting inoculated? So what is causing people not to do this? Or is this all political bullshit? Have we bought into the politics?
The other issue is politics, because we need to know how the vaccines are being distributed here in New York State. I mean, right now, we do not have figures.
What do you want to know about the distribution? What do you want to know? Just answer the question.
I want to know how the pharmacies are doing in attracting people into the pharmacies to get inoculated instead of making the vaccines available
to
the
very... I tried to sign up yesterday on Walgreens. I've been trying to sign up now for 3 weeks. Every time they would tell me to go up to Yonkers to get inoculated, I'm nowhere near Yonkers, where that store is. So I wanted to go something really close, which is only 2.5 blocks, and it kept. They wouldn't take the request there. But it turns out.
Thank you. You are making my point splendidly, because I was told by Westchester County. Westchester County could not tell me what the percentage was of pharmacies giving the vaccine and the Westchester Medical Center getting the vaccine. They referred me to Westchester Medical Center, and they referred me to the health department or the governor's office.
Yeah, but let me explain
it to
you.
There's a huge cover-up going on.
Can I please explain it to you? The reason they didn't take the request for an inoculation on the internet is because the particular place that I get my medication from, they didn't tell me that they didn't do Moderna. So, but the protocol by the CDC is, if you took Moderna, go with the Moderna booster. If you took something else, then go with that one. If you took Pfizer, then you should go with Pfizer. That's what they're saying. So the point is, they didn't want to tell you they don't do Moderna. They've been lying about it. And I knew that there were buses that show up every week now in my neighborhood, and there are about six of them. They all give inoculations. And I I said to them
My point is that the communication has been lacking on this whole rollout, and we do not know how good the distribution is working. And if you, in Westchester County Town, tell us that, they need to know that for their own strategizing.
Well, they didn't say it, and County Executive George Latimer is not saying it, and neither is Dr. Amler. They're both failing in their job, and that's their job.
Well, he canceled his briefing today. There's not going to be a briefing on COVID. They're trying to sort
that's
out
wonderful.
This fantastic surge. And he has a tough job. He has to actually decide whether he's going to if he's going to do anything more than what the governor
has
said.
You know what? There is no problem. There's nothing for him to decide. He just needs to be honest and tell it the way it is. That's the problem. We got people filtering this and making light of it by making believe that nothing needs to be said, and that's the problem. And the problem is that this, they think they can get away with it because that's the political game. But the point is,
they don't want to close down
the
recovery. They don't want to close down the recovery, and there's not going to be a recovery
go,
if they don't stop this.
We're finished for the half hour. We'll talk to you next week. Be well.
Until that time. G'day.
How you doing, Michael?
Hey, Hez. How are you doing?
Oh, good to speak to you today. What a pleasure. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on. You know, it's hard to tell what's what anymore. well, certainly inflation is causing a tremendous amount of... is there anything that can be done about this? Or this did happen in the past. And is this the only way we can progress out of the COVID crisis? You know, investing all this money, which is causing prices to rise, and also the supply chain is at fault.
Yeah. Well, it's the supply chain that's at fault because of COVID, and I'm not sure that the rescue money that has been appropriated is affecting prices. I just think we have to get past this logjam where we can't get the goods or the meat or whatever it is we're importing into our port to get it to the final its final place. So when we do that, I think prices will come back down, especially the price of gasoline, which has already started back down.
Yeah, I have heard that prices are expected to go down. And we'll see, but inflation will, you know, inflation's going to moderate some of the prices, so they say, as they go down. So we'll have to see where that goes. I want to ask you about something that I found very compelling. Chris Wallace has left Fox News for CNN after 18 years. Is this the beginning of something significant where Fox News is going to be losing some of its people? Or is this just an aberration with regard to Chris?
Well, in addition to Chris Wallace, Jonah Goldberg and his and another gentleman left last month. What's happening is the real news people, whether it's Wallace or Shepard Smith, who left previously, and some other reporters, are very disappointed that Fox would let something on the air like the documentary Tucker Carlson did, which suggested that the Capitol riot, the Capitol insurrection, was a false flag planned by the federal government. That's fake news and can't be justified. So what you're seeing at Fox is that they can no longer claim to be a news network. They're a propaganda arm, and they're left with reporters that aren't reporters, they're entertainers. Hannity, Ingram, Mark Levin, Jeanine Pirro, and Tucker Carlson, all of whom are in the business of riling up their viewers with fake facts. And that results in a lot of profit for Rupert Murdoch. And he's not willing to step in and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm a wealthy guy, a very wealthy guy. I want to make sure that my listeners receive the truth rather than try to bamboozle them and increase my profit margin, which is exactly what's going on. So until he or his sons reach that conclusion, Fox News is going to be a morass, a rabbit hole.
And do you think that the people that, you know, like Jeanine Pirro and others that you mentioned before, they've got no place to go unless they can hide out at Fox News, do they?
Well, no, nobody's going to hire these people other than Fox News, but so what?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not an excuse for keeping them. They're not leaving.
No, it's absolutely
staying,
not an excuse
the problem
for leaving.
Is with Rupert.
Well,
the problem
is
with
Rupert
Murdoch. That's the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is him and his son, Lachlan, to make money, and they don't care how they make it, and you know, so their newscasters are not really newscasters. They're really making up nonsense and garbage and conspiracy theories. That's fine as long as the advertisers keep advertising and the money keeps rolling in.
Yeah, that's the name of the game, I guess. It's news, but it's all about advertising. Well, I want to ask you about Florida because you now live in Florida, even though I remember you from up here in Westchester County. Republicans voters are now outnumbering Democrats. I don't think that ever happened before. And so that gives them a leg up in the potential race for governor with Ron DeSantis heading into a reelection campaign. And that also might embellish his numbers with regard to running for president. So are we going to replace Don with Ron?
Ron Don. We're going to have a Don Ron ticket. Now, Ron DeSantis has overreached in his office and is acting like a mini authoritarian. He's got his own, he's trying to get his own civil police force together. over which the governor has control rather than the federal government controlling the National Guard. He appointed an anti-vaxxer as the chief medical officer for the state of Florida.
He anti-mask
the entire way while Florida is the 10th largest death rate in the country. And he's being challenged by Charlie Crist, who was governor.
He's only about two or three points less in popularity in the polls, right?
The problem for Ron DeSantis is that he's a creature of Donald Trump. Donald Trump thinks he made Ron DeSantis. Donald Trump thinks that if he hadn't endorsed DeSantis in his congressional run, he wouldn't be governor.
Right.
So the other problem is that Donald Trump wants to be the only one running for president, and he wants everybody else to say that they cleared the way for him, that they're standing down. And so far, DeSantis hasn't done that, which is pissing Donald Trump off to no end. So DeSantis's problem is actually the voter profile of Florida. Even though Republicans outnumber Democrats, independents will determine the election in the state of Florida.
That's what I'd read, right?
Yeah.
Because they're going to make the difference.
That's right.
Go
ahead. Go ahead.
No. That you were answering the question before I even asked it.
No,
so
I'm just saying.
Where will the support come from in independents? Women?
You mean for Charlie Crist, right?
Right.
Well, you know, Ron's got a big problem with the abortion ruling in Texas. If that results ultimately next June, when the decision is going to be rendered by the Supreme Court, in effectively overturning Roe v. Wade, then all of these independent women who might have leaned Republican will vote for the Democrats.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Do you think that we're going to hear from women and they're not going to take it lying down? They're just not going to accept the ruling against Roe v. Wade.
Nothing is going to activate females more than a ruling that essentially states that men control their bodies, because that's what that ruling would state. That's what that ruling would result in, and it's how it would be interpreted by the people that, you know, by the females that see what's going on. So Republicans will not do well if Roe v. Wade is overturned. Will not do well at all.
Well, I wanted to ask you about something else with regard to COVID. We're now, I was reading in Great Britain, they're getting a doubling of the latest variant that's taking over the world, and it doubles every 2 to 3 days. So the numbers
Omicron.
Are really crazy. The Omicron. So in Great Britain, they want to inoculate 1 million people by the end of December. And do people realize that if you don't get inoculated, then you may get infected, or you may not. And even if you get infected, you can overcome it. But a lot of people don't realize even if they overcome the virus, they may get a long haul disease 2, 3, 4 months later, and they'll be suffering for who knows how long. And
the unvaccinated are making life miserable for everybody who's following along and taking the proper public health measures by getting 2 shots of the vaccine and a booster. If everybody gets 2 shots of the vaccine and a booster, we will not have a pandemic any longer. But they're not doing that. What they're doing
Go ahead. They're listening
to
what?
I'm listening. They're listening to misinformation.
It is misinformation. Well, one thing I know, nobody who got inoculated died. Not one of how many people got inoculated. But if you don't get inoculated, you can conceivably die because you can get it. you may get long haul and eventually you will die. And how come we don't hear that from the CDC? Is there a reluctance to tell it the way it really is? I mean, do we need to paint it up and polish it and make it look like it's okay, but it's not?
Well, they want to put lipstick on a pig? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, that's basically it.
Look, I think the CDC is doing the best it can under the circumstances, relying on the data when it comes in, and the data changes. So when the data changes,
right,
the CDC changes its mind, and people say that that is inconsistent, but it's not, because they're data dependent, and they're scientists,
right,
and that's what scientists do. When the data changes, they change. Fact of the matter is that we've got 50 million Americans that haven't been vaccinated. And until those people understand that they're going to get very sick if they don't get vaccinated eventually, because all the vaccine, all the virus needs is continuing availability of hosts to mutate and to circulate. And until, I mean, we vaccinated everybody against polio, polio's gone. We vaccinated everybody against smallpox. Smallpox is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, people are having a problem with the vaccine because jackasses in the Republican Party are suggesting there's something wrong with it. There's something wrong with Dr. Fauci. Today, Ron DeSantis sent out a newsletter, sent out a fundraising letter, asking to saying that Anthony Fauci should be put in jail. So that's
what you got.
All right, they're peddling nonsense because they know it results in money from their undereducated supporters.
Mm. Well, one thing is interesting. There was always this battle between individual rights and directives that came from CDC or from government. And it turned out that today, Governor Hochul in New York State has told staff members they'll be fined $1,000 for each violation. And will that hold up in court, or is that, do you expect that these sort of situations demanding that people get inoculated and demanding that they wear masks, and if they don't, they'll get fined? Will that stand up in court, or is there something that the court will have to rule different?
Mandatory vaccinations have been in place for 50 years. There's nothing new about mandatory vaccination. You can't go to public school
right
in New York State without getting vaccinated. Smallpox, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, and all the rest. You can't attend school.
Correct.
Now, the parents can bitch and cry and moan all they want, but the kids aren't going to be admitted to school. So what's the difference now? Now you have adults who are believing nonsense coming from, you know, different corners of the Internet about how vaccines are, they're not proven. You got 300 million people have taken vaccines. Nothing bad happens from the vaccines. It's the largest possible trial you could have. It's a real-world trial of real people. And yet these people don't want it. They don't trust the vaccines because they're given nonsense reasons by people like Alex Jones and other people who live off of information. It's how they make a living.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just really amazing that that's how they do it. Who knows what to do? You know, I'm totally floored by it all.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we never had a place where an echo chamber could give out nonsense to people who were not capable of critically thinking and figuring out that they shouldn't believe what they're being told. Because what happens is they have people have biases. And what these people do on television is they reinforce a bias that already exists.
Yeah.
If it's about conservatives not liking liberals, and then they put in the vaccine and it's a function of the liberals trying to inculcate their kids with communism and socialism in school, this whole big conspiracy theory gets wrapped up, and the result is that these people don't want to take vaccines.
Exactly.
And when they don't take vaccines, they're walking around infecting other people. You can infect other people without getting sick yourself. You can be perfectly healthy yourself in terms of symptoms, okay, and yet you're walking around carrying the virus.
Correct, correct. Unbelievable. Well, I want to ask you about something else. The manatees in Florida, unfortunately, they're starving, and they changed the ruling so that they could be fed. Evidently, the change in the water temperature where they feed has killed the crops that they eat normally, like lettuce or something similar to that. I don't know if that's part of climate change. It probably is. And then we had this major tornado, and a lot of people were killed in the middle of the country. Is there something that we could do about this, or is it going to take years and years to change the reality? Because it seems like it's climate change, but I don't know if that's the way they – if it's labeled.
Well, we're seeing harsher weather events.
Yeah.
The scientists tell us are attributable to global warming.
Yeah.
And but again, you've got a whole reservoir of radio personalities who accuse the scientists of being tools of liberals, and that their agenda has to do with making the world secular, making the United States secular and non-Christian. And that's why they're floating. I always tell people when I'm arguing with them, hey, look, if we spend $10 billion to deal with climate change, if I'm wrong, climate change is really not an issue, we will have wasted $10 billion. But here's the other side of that. If I'm right and we don't spend the $10 billion, it's going to cost us trillions of dollars in damage.
Right, right.
Taking out an insurance policy. You pay the $10 billion now to prevent the $30 trillion in lost real estate values and lost productivity, okay, when you can't live within 30 miles of the coast.
Right.
That's the
bet
you're making. So when people tell you there's no such thing as climate, they may be right, but they may be wrong. And if they're wrong, it's going to be a price that the United States is not going to be able to pay.
I got to ask you about something else, which is usually a little bit further than your being able to talk about these issues, or that, you know, you cover the United States and different states and so on and so forth. But as a policy for the federal government, can the president do anything with regard to protecting, or literally the threats have been made against Russia of trying to invade Ukraine? There's supposedly over 100,000 troops on the border, and nobody really knows nobody knows exactly what the Russians are going to do, and there've been threats that they're going to have to pay financially, unbelievably, as retribution.
Mm-hmm.
But can we defend? Can we defend Ukraine? Can we defend, for you know, the island of Taiwan? I mean, are these possibilities, or are we just too far away?
Well, you know, the situation in Russia is totally different than the situation in China. China claims to always claim Taiwan as a part of mainland China.
Right.
Russia, on the other hand, the USSR broke apart, and the countries that used to comprise the USSR, like Ukraine and Belarus and all the rest.
They
wanted to be democracies. And Putin is trying to put Humpty Dumpty together again. But as a democracy, the Ukraine ought to be able to do what it wants to do. So the push and pull is, can another country force another country? Can one country force another country to be a part of it? And the answer to that is we say no, but we're not going to send our troops. What we're going to do is send them economic aid. We're going to send them military aid. And we're going to put sanctions on Russia that we believe Russia can't afford to pay. Sanctions not only on the state, but sanctions on the oligarch individuals that are close to Vladimir Putin and on whom he depends to remain in power. And if those sanctions are so great that Russia crumbles as a result of it, Russia may think twice before invading Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that will be very interesting if the sanctions are going to make a difference.
Let me make one other point.
Sure.
Let me make one other point.
Mm-hmm.
You've got mail.
Russia is a white Christian nation.
Yeah.
And that's why Tucker Carlson gets on the air and says, all Russia wants to do is preserve its western border, which it has a right to do. Mm-hmm. It's why the right wing in this country is so close to Vladimir Putin. They like Putin better than they like Biden. Polling shows. Mm-hmm. So you've got white evangelicals in this country are going, why can't we be like Russia? They don't have any black and brown people in Russia to speak of. It's all white. It's all Russian Orthodox. It's all basically one religion. They look toward Russia as a model for what they want the United States to be.
Uh-huh. Well, I never thought of it that way. That's amazing. Really amazing. Do we need to bolster our hospitals? Because they seem to be overflowing with so many people getting infected.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I read that in New York State, after people waiting for an ICU doctor to see them, they could have waited 13 hours, 15 hours.
Right.
Eventually they were seen by the doctors. And when they finished going through the recuperation in the hospital, they were trying to find a place for them to really recuperate thereafter, like a nursing home.
Right.
And the closest they could find a nursing home was in New York City. Yeah. From all the way upstate, they kept on going further and further south. They had to come to New York City.
Yeah, but really the closest they could find a nursing home that had available beds was New York City.
Well, that's what we're talking about, available beds.
Yeah, available beds.
Be overwhelmed.
Well.
With people getting infected.
In Republican areas, 10 times more likely to get sick and die than in areas that Joe Biden won. In areas that, counties that Republican Donald Trump won, you are far more likely to die because you're not vaccinated. I mean, this is not rocket science. Not rocket science at all. If you're not vaccinated, you're going to get sick. That's a guarantee. Okay, so if you're not vaccinated, you live in a Republican county, and you want to do what Donald Trump says to do, okay?
Yeah.
Rather than what he does, which is get a vaccine privately in the White House, along with Melania and the kid, okay, very early on, why don't you look and see what he does and copy what he does rather than what he says? Okay, but they don't, so they don't get vaccinated, and they think they're strong enough not to get the virus, or if they get the virus, nothing serious is going to happen, and that's just wrong. They wind up sick, and the older people are getting sicker.
Unbelievable.
People get sick
because
they're older.
I hear another thing. I think, remember North Korea's Kim? He became somebody of renown only because of President Trump, who evidently wasn't able to outsmart Kim, and Kim seemed to outsmart Trump because they never came to an agreement whatsoever. But it does seem that the two Koreas might be getting together. I don't know exactly how, but I just heard inklings of it. Is that going to affect America in any way?
Well,
you
would be nice
seen that
to
either.
No, certainly not, because I don't think Kim is going to in any way cede any power to any other complete and total power. The whole point is he wants to preserve his regime. That's what the whole – that's why he acts the way he acts. All right, and you don't preserve your regime if you make friends or you have agreements with allies that were former enemies. Mm-hmm. He's just not going to do it. So it just I don't believe that for a second.
Well, one thing that you're closer to your bailiwick is the House panel investigating January 6th Capitol insurrection. They're going to recommend contempt charges against former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
Yeah. Bingo.
So that's supposedly going to happen today.
That's right. And do you know
what
why?
Does that tell us? No.
It tells us.
That's what I'm asking you.
Chris, wait a minute. Yeah, I know. It tells us, as Chris Christie said yesterday in response to questions from George Stephanopoulos, that the insurrection from the top, it was directed by the White House and Donald Trump. Mark Meadows received PowerPoint presentation, a 36-page slide presentation showing exactly how to stop Biden from being certified.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their script. And Meadows met numerous times in the White House with the guy that prepared this memorandum. I don't know his name. And that means that Trump knew. If Meadows knew, Trump knew. Because Meadows isn't going to do anything that Donald Trump doesn't want him to do.
Right.
Meadows is a weak guy. Meadows is a sycophant. When Meadows was in the Congress, he voted against Kevin McCarthy to be minority leader. Okay, and he lost. McCarthy became minority leader. Then he went down to Kevin McCarthy's office and fell on his knees to beg for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
He's got no spine, no backbone. He's a creature, Washington, and he's a sycophant to Donald Trump. So what he's doing is playing both ends against the middle. He turned over thousands of pages for him to say that he cooperated with the January 6th commission and to get off the hook on the issue of directing direction, because he knows Donald Trump directed it. He doesn't want to take the fall for what Donald Trump did since he was chief of staff. This is in line with his conduct. No backbone. He won't stand up for anything but himself, and he's going down.
Wow. So are we getting to a point where we're going to finally get evidence to prove to America what happened? Because so many people don't believe.
Well, they don't believe
it. Is that also?
And a lot of people aren't going to believe it. There were 38% of the people still approved of Richard Nixon when he resigned.
Right.
That doesn't mean you shouldn't demonstrate what happened. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Do you think in some sense what was going on over this weekend is informed people like Chris Wallace and others? Is that what's going to really undermine the Fox News network as well?
No, I think Chris Wallace got out of there because he couldn't stand it any longer. You had so many people pumping out nonsense that he said, you know what? I don't want to be associated with this stuff. Plus, they criticized him when he would have a guest on that was a Trump supporter, and he'd go after that guest. And he got criticism from his own network. So he did. Why should he stay around for that? He's no spring chicken. He's late 60s. I'm sorry, Chris. I think he's 74, isn't he? Yeah, I think he's 74 years old. Yeah, why he dyes his hair? He looks almost as good as I do.
Okay, and the two of you probably look better than I do, so we won't go there. you look like you're not even 50, you know?
I know.
And
I know,
people
it's
once
true.
Questioned
I feel like
your
I'm
photo,
80,
which, well, that's a different story, it's amazing. Well, do you have any last-minute comments about any other topics?
No, I just keep your eye on the January 6th commission, because they're going to hold Meadows in criminal contempt, and that's going to be a snowball that picks up steam. There are going to be others that come in that were in the White House that saw what went on and that were horrified.
Mm.
Don't know their names yet, but we will learn them. These are the, you know, these are the staff, the understaff, the assistant staff, and the chief assistant, and assistant chief. All of these people saw what was going on, and now they're going to testify.
It's going to be mind-boggling. So I guess everyone will be glued to their TV set so that the next week, or certainly within 2 weeks for sure.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Exactly.
Well, as usual, always a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. You be
You're
well.
Welcome. I'll speak to you.
Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Be well.
Yep.
Well, there we have it. None other than political analyst and pundit Michael Edelman, Esquire. He knows the people he talks about. It's not just opinion. So it's just terrific. And always a pleasure to speak to him because it's such a learning experience, at least for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well. bear with me one moment. I want to move on to another page. Bear with me a second here. And one second. Got to move on to the next screen. And I think we'll be here in a moment. One split second here. This I think you'd want to hear because Prime Minister Johnson of Great Britain warns of a tidal wave of Omicron as the United Kingdom raises the COVID-19 alert level. It seems that on Sunday, Prime Minister Boris Johnson warned of a looming tidal wave, that's the way he put it, of Omicron, and brought forward a target to give over 18-year-olds a booster for by 1 month to the end of December. So it is unbelievable. No one should be in any doubt, he says, that there's a tidal wave of Omicron coming, he said in a televised address after the country's medical advisor raised the COVID alert level due to a rapid increase in, quote-unquote, in infection from the variant. So the increase in the five-stage COVID alert level from 3 to 4 comes after a further 1,239 confirmed cases of the variant were recorded on Sunday. That's huge. That brings the total number of UK cases of Omicron to 3,137, a 65% increase from Saturday's total of 1,898. Just imagine, from 1,898 to 3,137, 65% increase from Saturday. And this was on Sunday. Unbelievable. Britain began easing coronavirus restrictions in June, and the alert level was at a stage 3, which means the epidemic is in general circulation. Level 4 means transmission is high and pressure on healthcare services is widespread and substantial or rising. And the 4 chief medical officers for England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland said the move was prompted by advice from the UK Health Security Agency, a public health body. And they said transmission of COVID-19 is already high in the community, mainly still driven by Delta. The emergence of Omicron adds additional and rapidly increasing risk to the public and healthcare services, they said. Early evidence shows that Omicron is spreading much faster than Delta and that vaccine protection against symptomatic disease from Omicron is reduced. Well, data on severity will become clearer over the coming weeks, but hospitalizations from Omicron are already occurring and these are likely to increase rapidly. So the officers said that boosters were vital given that vaccine protection was reduced with Omicron, and both third jabs using Pfizer and Moderna, I'm waiting to get my Moderna shot, my booster, increased immune response and showed good effectiveness. So the move is designed to reduce pressure on the state-run National Health Service, which is dealing with seasonal respiratory infections such as the flu. So the government had set itself a target of giving everyone aged 18 and over in England a booster jab by the end of January. But Johnson said that date would be brought forward by a month because not having high levels of boosters could overwhelm the National Health Service and lead, sadly, to very many deaths, he said. So, more than 530,000 jabs were given on Saturday, the Department of Health and Social Care had said. The devolved administration in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, which set health policy, all announced accelerated booster programs. In England itself, face masks were made compulsory in many indoor public places last Friday. And from today, people are being advised to work from home if possible. From Tuesday, fully vaccinated contacts of people who test positive for COVID-19 will be required to take daily lateral flow tests for 7 days. But those who have not had one or two shots of a COVID vaccine will have to self-isolate for 10 days. That's what the health secretary, Sajid Javid, had said. And a vaccine passport will be introduced in certain settings from Wednesday. Ministers of Parliament vote to make the proposals law on Tuesday. Johnson facing a potentially sizable rebellion from his own conservative colleagues. The vote, though, is still likely to pass with Labour support. Britain is one of the worst hit countries by COVID-19 with more than 146,000 deaths. Again, its mass vaccination campaign, began last December. So infection rates remain stubbornly high at about 50,000 positive cases per day in London alone. Omicron accounts for about a third of all COVID-19 cases. And what goes on there will come here, and it just does. That's the progression somehow, and that's what we've been following through. So we'll just see what's what. Okay, well, I think that that's where we're going to be today. We don't have time to go on any further. One thing that you might like to know, which we didn't think was going to happen, tomorrow we have a broadcast with Brendan Beery, who we expected to be on tomorrow's show, and he's scheduled. But then Jeff Swartz, the other CMU Cooley law professor, he was going to go in for some surgery, but he doesn't need to, which is even better, thank goodness for him. So he'll be on tomorrow's broadcast. He sent me a text this morning at about 8:30. So I'm thrilled for him. And that's it. So we'll speak to them in the morning from 10 to 11. And then it'll be just you and I thereafter in the second hour. Oh, I did want to tell you one other thing. And my fault. Let me move on to the next page. I wanted to talk to you about a particular issue that took place in Yonkers. I knew I was missing something, but I didn't know what it was. Bear with me a moment. Here it is. Okay. This is usually for subscribers only, but I want to share this with you because I think it's very important. Not everyone is a subscriber to our publication. But I wrote this. It's called Yonkers City Councilman John Rubo Election Campaign Violations Were Debunked for Exceeding Financial Limits. It's written by me, and it's simply it's a editorial, which is a nice way of calling it an editorial that was advised by me to change the editorial to hesitorial by our readers. So this is one of those. It's called The Conduct of and by Yonkers City Councilman John Rubo, Democrat, Yonkers City Council District 4, Hesitorial, and that's the name of it. Yonkers Board of Ethics gave written permission informing Councilman Rubo that he need not recuse himself from any issuer, or rather any issue, coming before the real estate chair over which he presides as its chairman. Well, the donations afforded by Councilman Rubo's landlord, AMS LLC 86 Main Street of Yonkers, New York, are legal and within the maximum permitted, as noted below, for the June 9, 2021 donation, and likewise by the donation by AMS Group LLC of Englewood, New Jersey. Each AMS entity, as noted, is entitled to donate to any campaign effort they choose. They are separate entities. were there additional AMS entities, 5 more, 20 more, even 100 more, they would each be permitted to support the campaign effort of their choice as voted upon by their board of directors within the maximum permitted limits as set by law. And in this case, in every aspect of the Councilman John Rubo's campaign effort was ascribed to and met legal standards. Before I move on, just so you know, besides corporate structures, people who work for that corporation can also give money at whatever level, whether it be $1, $3, $5, $25, $100, $2,000. It doesn't matter as long as it's within limits. And so you never know how many other people may have done that. But the question that came forward is not the individuals that may work for AMS. There may be or they may not be. But certainly the two notices that were found were actually for $2,000 apiece. But those are all pertinent. So the standards, guidance, and directive defined for Councilman John Rubo are noted below. So let's start with the first one. On June 9th of 2021, $2,000 was the contribution by AMS1 LLC, 86 Main Street, and I was in Yonkers, and it was a monetary contribution. It was a United States A monetary contribution received from an independent and partnership, including LLP's campaign to elect John Rubo, and the ID number was there. Then on June 14th of 2021, $2,000 from AMS Group LLC, this one based in Englewood, New Jersey, also for the $2,000. Then we have to point out a couple of things. With respect to the allegations that were raised regarding John, as in Yonkers City Councilman John Rubo, his relationship with AMS. One, on December 2nd of 2020, Councilman Rubo submitted correspondence to the Board of Ethics in Yonkers requesting an advisory opinion on whether he can serve as the chair of the Real Estate Committee and or vote on matters appearing before the City Council relating to AMS. Number two, on January 13th of 2021, Councilman Rubo appeared before the Yonkers Board of Ethics to answer questions concerning inter alia or his relationship with AMS. Number three, on February 24, 2021, Yonkers Corporation Council issued an advisory opinion to the Yonkers Board of Ethics concerning the foregoing along with outside legal counsel. And number four, the Yonkers Board of Ethics, after fully considering and deliberating the matter, including Yonkers Corporation Council's opinion, subsequently adopted a resolution number 1-2021, which was approved 5-0, finding that, quote, there is no ethical prohibition with respect to Councilman John Rubo taking action on behalf of the city, provided that he continues to fully disclose his relationship with AMS to the satisfaction of the Ethics Board prior to taking any action on matters related to AMS. So the document issued by the Yonkers Board of Ethics on December 2nd of 2020 was initially ascribed by Dennis Gallegos, the Yonkers Board of Ethics Secretary. And just bear with me a moment. Okay, and this is what was said. What follows is the Yonkers Board of Ethics webpage retrieved and posted on the City of Yonkers website yesterday on the 12th when I wrote this. Their purpose is renders opinion on potential conflicts of interest, requests and reviews, confidential disclosure, statements of city officials. The Ethics Board is established by Section C1A, -23 of the Code of Ethics of the City of Yonkers. Its duties include investigations of ethics complaints, conducting hearings, recommending disciplinary action, rendering advisory opinions, administration of city employee disclosure statements, and providing ethics training for city employees. This is a three-year term. All members are appointed by the Ethics Board Appointing Committee, which includes the mayor, the presiding judge of the city court, and city council president without city council advice or consent. There's a contact number for them that's listed in the article, and the law department there is comprised of Thomas Drexel, who's the chairman, Dennis Gallego, the secretary who signed the documentation, Patricia Dickerson, Thomas Drexel, Kathleen Ennis, Maria Fargoso, and Joseph Noka. He's the judge, a former judge. So that's the story there, and that's where we are. So that's the end of the line for us today. Thank you for being with us. We'll speak to you tomorrow when we talk about the U.S. Constitution with CMU Cooley Law School professors based in the Tampa, Florida campus. We're talking about Brendan McGrath Jeffrey Swartz. I am so bad about English names. I don't know what stalls me every time. And it's always like a burden of remembering people's names, even though I know them. Like I speak to Mr. Swartz and Mr. Beery every week on Tuesdays. So I don't even understand where that comes from. But I always had trouble with remembering people's names. Give me a foreign name, I'll be the first one to remember. So that's the story. Anyway, be well and take care. Thanks for being with us. Goodbye.